Welcome to the 122nd episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. As usual, I'm joined by Mark Davis, the master of the quiz.
Hey, I'm mastering all the quizzes, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, and we're joined once again by my lovely wife, Kyle Ann. Welcome back.
Hello.
Your wife.
She will be once again playing the part of all-time susser.
What episode? Did you say 122?
132nd.
I thought you said 122.
No, I said 132nd.
We'll see what the tape says.
132. Mark, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Doing fine.
From the comfort of my own home, this is a very late night record. I'm in my jammies. As you can see, I'm wearing some of those with the footies and the butt flap.
I like the tassels,
very
too.
Cute. Thank I like you. It.
I appreciate it.
It's, you know, the holidays have passed, but you still look very festive.
Yeah, well, it's I in my kerchief, and someone in a kerchief, and me in my cap. I'm just about to settle down for a very short nap before I have to wake up for work.
True that.
Yeah, how's everything going over there?
Great, we're back in full swing. We've got our Wednesday night trivia cooking at Pointy Bell. And we've been live streaming that on Twitch, and we just hosted our Thursday night virtual quiz again, which was a lot of fun. And once again, thank you and shout out to all of the wonderful players that have made that so nice for us in 2020. We look forward to serving you up some fresh quizzes in 2021. Speaking of which, we have a quiz prepared for you this episode. Mark, I feel like I'll give you a little heads up on the categories, or should I? Do you have the categories prepared?
Maybe a couple.
Maybe we should do a surprise episode for the categories.
Let's do it.
Let's do a surprise. Yeah. But before we get to all that, how about we go over a weekly wrap-up?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, on Wednesday at Pointy Bell Brewing Company, One by One was our in-house winner for round one, but they couldn't stop the team called First Time Long Time from Hoboken, who took rounds two and three, as well as the overall quiz, finishing with 97 points total. Elise played virtually as Getting Trivially Eiffel Towered by Mark and Lee, and was our online winner, besting Saruta, No Country for Moist Men, and Genocide with 115 points. And Mark, I think she was your virtual points leader over at Nice Guys as well.
She certainly was. Yeah, she ended up winning the final round on Zoom. In-house, however, the team Trivial Poo-Poos won with 47 points. They they got an answer sheet for the first round. They won. They won a beer and some beads. And then for the second round, they won. They were going to take off. I said, look, you've only got two or three or four other teams playing. It was a relatively slower night. Why don't you stick around? You could win a $25 bar tab. They ended up getting a $25 gift certificate for this fish and chips place around here that has been nice enough to donate some gift certificates. So they won that. And they're like, holy shit, we won this for the second round. I was like, yeah, so stick around for the third. And they did, win with 42 points.
Wow.
And as I mentioned earlier, Elise... Getting Trivially Eiffel Towered by Mark and Lee. And she won my trivia as well as yours, beating Whiskey Tango by a narrow margin.
Well, congratulations, Elise, on your double live stream victory. You can try your own hand at it this week, because we will both be streaming that. But first, I just want to mention on Thursday, we had our virtual trivia night on Twitch. Apple 30309 won our quiz number 101 with 155,945 points, as well as our new metal band identification audio round. Grantastic Glenn and Mappy coming in second and third place on Quiz 101. Whiskey Tango DC picking up the victory for Quiz 102 with 129,223 points. So congratulations to Whiskey Tango on your victory there. But also shout out to Grantastic Glenn, H-Bomb and Friends, Mappy 1984, and Mariah, who all broke 100,000 points on that quiz. It was a very tight top of the leaderboard there.
Tight like a toga.
And if you want to play No Nonsense Trivia this week, you have a few opportunities to do so. This Wednesday, January 13th, We're back at Pointy Bell Brewing Company in Fort Myers, Florida. Categories for the quiz are based on player requests. If you're not in Southwest Florida and can't make it out, we'll be streaming the quiz on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/nononsensetrivia. That starts at Pointy Bell at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time this Wednesday, January 13th. More details in the show notes. And if you're in the Cape, you can play Mark's Trivia on Wednesday at Nice Guys Pizza in Cape Coral or on Zoom. So check out the link in the show notes for that. That starts at 8 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. And Thursday, January 14th, we're back on Twitch for our weekly virtual trivia night. I'll be asking questions based on our player requests. Come play to get your name on our leaderboard. You can request categories for next week's virtual quiz. We'll start at 8 p.m. on Twitch, so follow us there to get a notification on that. And we will be returning to Palace Pub and Wine Bar with a monthly quiz, either on Friday or Saturday nights. We're taking feedback on the day of the week over this coming week, so if you have a preference, please go to the show notes, and there is a poll in the show notes, and you can vote on whether or not you want to come out to Palace Pub and Wine Bar in Cape Coral on Friday or Saturday evenings for a quiz, our monthly quiz, which is returning to the venue sometime in the next month. We'll let you know about the specific date soon, and please don't forget to follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit. And join us on our Discord server to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us.
Won't you? Discord, I thought it was Disco Road.
Why not? Let's write them a letter. Maybe they'll change it.
Maybe they will.
Okay, let's take a quick little break, and then we'll jump right into trivia in round one. Hey, we're back. Mark, are you ready for question number one?
I am.
You guys, racing, not so much your thing. How about sailing?
No, probably less my thing.
All right. I guarantee you've heard of this guy before, though.
Okay.
I guarantee it.
All right.
Who won the America's Cup in 1977, as well as the 605-mile Fastnet race in 1979, sailing through a storm that sank 23 boats and killed 18 people. This person would also be later be the first media figure to be named Time Magazine's Man of the Year in 1992.
Kyle, I'll read that one more time for eyes. You. Just your eyes peeking over.
I'll read that one more time for you. Who won the America's Cup in 1977? As well as the 605-mile Fastnet race in 1979, sailing through a storm that sank 23 boats and killed 18 people, and would later be the first media figure ever to be named Time Magazine's Man of the Year. Now Person of the Year.
Do you have any ideas?
So I actually know this.
Oh, do you?
Because Lee asked me this question.
I did. Sorry, Mark. I'm leaving you hanging out to dry here again.
Sorry.
You're on your own here.
Ted Turner.
That's your answer?
Yep.
That is correct.
Is it?
It is.
What the hell?
Very good. Yes, he was for CNN, founding CNN in 1991.
Okay.
Founding CNN in 1991. He won Man of the Year in 1992. He's the first media figure for that, and actually had a distinguished sailing career, winning the America's Cup, which is basically like the biggest prize in sailing in 1977, and then also completing and winning the 605-mile Fastnet race in 1979, which was besieged by a hurricane. He sailed through a hurricane. It sank 23 boats, killed 18 people. His yacht's name was Tenacious. How aptly named for that race.
Ternacious.
Mm-hmm. The Ternacious Ted.
Wow. That is okay. That's I knew
Good
he
job,
was a
Mark.
Media figure.
Wow.
And he seems like the kind of person that would boat.
Mm-hmm.
Good deal. All right. Here's your first question. That's wild. A blogger noticed that famed mascot Captain Crunch has three stripes on his jacket, which would actually give him what rank in the Navy?
Admiral?
That was my thought, too.
Okay.
Should we just go with our guts on this?
Let's just go with our guts.
What else is there? Lieutenant?
Corporal?
Corporal?
There's Colonel.
Not lieutenant. Is there?
Maybe. I think so. Corporal
so
Crunch.
So naval ranks.
Lieutenant. Corporal Crunch?
Sounds like Corporal Crunchment.
Right.
Corporal Crunch sounds like a metal band name.
It's yes. We're Corpus Crunch.
We're Corporal Crunch from Corpus Christi.
Admiral Crunch.
Yeah, let's go with Admiral.
Yeah.
Admiral.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Ooh.
Wrong. The correct answer is Commander Crunch.
Commander Crunch.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Commander Crunch.
He reportedly tweeted, the crunch makes the man, not the stripes on his clothes, or something to that effect.
Fantastic.
Great tweet.
Yeah, very good tweet.
Okay, U.S. geography, your second category. The Triple Divide, a hydrological apex where water flows into the Pacific, Arctic, and Atlantic oceans, can be found in which U.S. state? The Triple Divide, a hydrological apex where water flows into the Pacific, Arctic, and Atlantic oceans, can be found in which U.S. state?
Did Lee ask you this too?
He did, but I don't remember the answer.
Jesus Christ. So Lee just basically got a susser for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, I don't remember the answer.
This is the last one, though. This is the last one.
Really?
Yes. All the rest are fresh questions.
Okay.
Well, it's good that you even came in knowing that. That's wonderful. all right. So it goes into the Pacific.
And the Arctic.
The Arctic.
And the Atlantic.
And the Atlantic.
The three major bodies of water surrounding North America.
Do you have any ideas?
If I remember correctly, I was initially thinking Hawaii because there's like, I think there's even like an underground mountain or some shit over there. I guess that's irrelevant. But you know, it's situated in where like maybe there's a bunch of like currents that are converging, and you know,
is the Arctic up top or down low?
I believe it's up top because I think the one that's down below is the called the Southern Sea, which was changed. They changed the name of it.
Could it be Alaska?
That would make sense, but I feel like that's probably not it because that seems obvious. I feel like it's somewhere like, I don't know. Maybe it is Alaska. Maybe I'm overthinking it.
I mean, you know, there's 40 some states that it can't be, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of something that would bridge the divide. I don't know what this water thing is that would make it so water flows to all three of those oceans. But
well, it is a hydrological apex. So the full name of the location is Triple Divide Peak.
Yeah, I mean, I mean that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what up there could make water flow to three different oceans. That seems wild.
Maybe it's like a Michigan because there's like the Great Lakes there. And isn't that where the Mississippi ends?
That's not a bad idea. The other thing to consider is peak. You know what I mean? Like something with a very high point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Alaska, I just kind of feel is, I know it's kind of lazy maybe, but what do you think about Alaska?
Yeah. I think that sounds right.
All right, we're going to go with Alaska.
That's wrong. Memory has failed you.
Sorry.
The answer is Montana. Montana. Oh. So, at Triple Divide
right
Peak,
track.
It is located in Flathead County, Montana, and it has it is where the continental divides converge. Water flows up through Canada into Alaska to hit the Arctic Ocean and goes all the way to the Hudson and the Gulf of Mexico. So lots of little offshoots, but yeah, Triple Divide Peak is it's a mountain in Montana that serves as the hydrological apex in North America. There's actually three, but that's like the big one. There's three hydrological apexes, three triple divides in North America. There's also one in Pennsylvania that runs off of a hill, and also one in Minnesota as well.
Hmm. Okay.
So, yeah.
Here's your second question of the round.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. A Wainwright is a person who repairs what, especially popular before the 19th century?
Bad songs, right? The Wainwrights?
Yeah, okay.
You're funny.
Repairs like what? What does a... So this is their namesake. The Wainwrights.
Do you think it's like
you said, like, before the 19th century?
Especially popular before the 19th century, yes.
Maybe like before the 19th century. So maybe like a horse saddles or something, or wigs even.
Wigs, interesting. The horse thing I like, because, you know, predates the car. So it would be, you know, there was some technological innovation that occurred that made the Wainwrights turn to the guitar. Saddle repair.
Yeah, or that's like horse gear or something. Mm-hmm. Horseshoes.
Spurs.
Yeah.
Spur repair. A Wainwright. I don't know why. I guess I'm just thinking of shipwright. So that I was thinking of.
That's like a good one. That's another good one, I think.
What is it? Wane, wax and wane, you know, coming and going, right?
Well, it's spelled W-A-I-N in my head. Different. It's a different.
Different Wane.
Yes.
Man, it's a whole world of Wanes. A Wayne's World, if you will.
So, party, yeah, on. Horses or ships sound to feel good to me.
Or shoes.
That's what I said that earlier, yeah. But before the 19th century, I feel like people were still using ships after the 19th century, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot. Like, fuck, people were using ships.
Yeah, they're still in style. Ted Turner knows.
Or maybe, I don't know, because the materials did change. Like, they were made from wood, and then they, by, you know, the early 20th century, it was, like, metal. Mm-hmm. They're giant, like, the Titanic and shit were really popular.
And people were still using horses well throughout the 19th century.
They were.
So, I don't know about horses now.
Yeah.
Because he would have said 20th century.
Mm-hmm. What were people using?
Quill pens.
That's actually not pretty good.
A Wainwright. It just seems like you would need something like
outhouse. A Wainwright, maybe somebody who like repaired books, because when was the printing press invented? Like they didn't have, they couldn't just easily reproduce the book. They had to have somebody like physically like an art forger slash like handwriting copier type person.
Yeah. Gutenberg, the printing press, I believe was invented in the 18th century, 17th century.
Okay. Well, then
17th century. Yeah.
Okay.
18th century. I'll go with 18th. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. You can miscorrect me. So you think it was books?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just sussing. I don't know which one I feel best about.
I don't know why. I just feel like it's like, what is a wright? A wright is somebody who repairs. That's what it means. Like they're writing it. It was wronged and they're writing it.
And what's a Wayne?
A Wainwright.
W-A-I-N is how, I mean, that is how I'm spelling this right, correct?
W-A-I-N, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Waxing, oh, you said, so it's spelled differently. It's a different Wayne than waxing and waning.
Yes.
So I was just thinking, waxing and waning means coming and going, right?
Yep.
Or getting bigger and smaller. Yeah.
So maybe if it is, I don't know why I'm back to the horse thing again, but it's like going, you're going well. A Wainwright is like, you go away well.
I think you're getting in the weeds about this.
You're right.
I like girlies, waxing and a milking. Coordinating trim is my man, Dave Shilkin. That's the Beastie Boys.
New Exploding Pages lyrics. Oh, okay. I was going to say, it sounds like Beastie Boys.
It is. Back when, before they were PC. Before Kathleen Hanna got involved.
She's like, hey, stop.
She righted them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I mean, what do you think?
Let's go with boat repair.
Okay.
Repairs boats.
Sorry, that's incorrect. But, you know, a person that is in charge of fixing the hull of boats, especially in piratedom, was known as a boatswain. So not too far off. Person who repairs books, a conservator.
Okay.
A Wainwright is someone who repairs carts or buggies, things like that.
Okay. We were on the right track.
Especially wheels for those things, but carts, wagons, things like that.
Okay.
All right. That makes sense.
We were barking up the right tree, but we just had no push. All right, my last question for round one for you guys. Famous families is the category. I'm going to ask you about a father-daughter pairing here. Who are the only father-daughter pairing to have had their hit songs parodied by Weird Al Yankovic?
Oh, I know this.
I know this, too.
It's Billy Ray and Miley.
Mm-hmm. I think that's on. Well, I know Icky Breaky Song. Now, here's the thing. What Miley... Oh, yeah, Party in the USA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's, it is Billy Ray and Miley Cyrus.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. Because hey. I was thinking, I know he did Wrecking Ball in one of his polka medleys, but yes. I was like trying to think of the song. But yeah.
Yeah, it's not really a parody, but he did parody Party in the CIA.
Yes. I remember that.
And Achy Breaky Song. In 1992 and 2011, I believe.
Fantastic.
It's a family affair.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Alapalooza and Alpocalypse, the albums.
Alpocalypse Now. My trivia thing just took a shit. Give me a second.
Oh, wipe its ass.
I think I can remember this question from the top of my head. What European capital city is known as the City of Seven Hills?
I'm thinking maybe, I don't know why I'm thinking Barcelona. Barcelona,
please.
Or Geneva. I don't know if there's like any sort of
I went to a convention there. God.
Yeah.
Geneva.
In Geneva? Oh, yeah. You're okay.
The Geneva.
What's the capital of Austria again?
Vienna.
Vienna.
No. Yes. Because Geneva is Switzerland.
With the Sound of Music.
Yes. And then Vienna, Austria.
Could it be Vienna? Based on that.
Oh.
I mean, you saw those hills.
They were.
Did you see seven?
There were some fucking hills, man.
Mm-hmm. I counted at least three. And then some in the distance.
They were there. The hills were there.
Mm-hmm.
The hills.
I have eyes.
Do they have eyes?
No, I have the eyes.
You have
I'm
the
counting
eyes.
The hills.
Okay, I see. All right.
I'd like to say Vienna.
Okay.
That is, but I've never been to Europe, but I have seen The Sound of Music.
Oh, babe, we should go to Europe.
And there were hills in it. I would imagine Ireland and Scotland probably have way more than seven hills.
Yeah. Dublin is not a hilly.
No?
Oh, I mean, like... The countryside of Ireland is very mountainous and hilly and beautiful. But Dublin itself is not very hilly.
Yeah.
If Ireland had three hills, you'd have to be doubling them to get almost seven.
Very good math.
Thank you.
Good math.
Good maths.
We're going to go with Vienna.
That's incorrect. Wrong. The correct answer is Roma.
Rome.
Rome, oh. Italy, is okay. known as the Why city it... of seven hills.
Why does it get that name?
Because there's seven main hills there.
Oh, well, okay.
After all these years, seven hills reign.
The question I originally found was something like, what city was apparently started on this one particular hill? And when I was looking up information about it, I saw that it was called the City of Seven Hills. And I was like, that's interesting.
We got seven of them.
Hey, pick one, motherfuck.
All right, well, let's take a little break. And then we have a new missed correction theme to listen to before we get to those and our no notes and then have our second round of trivia.
Sounds good.
Back, and we have a new missed correction theme here from featuring a former guest, Mark. Let's see if you can guess who this is.
Wow, that rules.
That's killer. Yes. I love it.
A former guest. Let me think here.
A recent guest. He is in a band that's name is the most trafficked mammal in the world.
Oh, John Lane.
Mm-hmm, of Pangolin.
Yes. Well done, Pangolin. Thank you, John Lane. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm, they brought it.
They did bring the heat.
Yeah. So go check out their new release, Good Songs Played Poorly. It's an EP of covers, and they have some other releases on streaming and a Bandcamp. You can check them out. Pangolin is the group. Thank you so much for that miscorrection theme, you guys. All right, Mark, Kyle, yes. You guys were sussing about the coffee places in 90s television shows and wondering about what the name of the coffee place in Frasier is. I looked it up. It is Cafe Nervosa. Cafe Nervosa. And ticker tape, Mark, was the earliest electrical dedicated financial communications medium. So it was to print out the stock exchange, basically. And you're right. They did use it in parades in New York. So your intuition there was, not unfounded. And the term ticker came from the sound made by the machine as it printed.
And don't they call the thing at the bottom of the screen on like 24-hour news channels and stuff, don't they call that a ticker, like a news ticker?
That's right.
Relatable.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
And a bit of extra McDonald's trivia here. Did you know that Ray Kroc is not the original founder of McDonald's?
I do. There was two brothers.
Exactly. It was Richard and Maurice McDonald.
Yeah. And then that's where the McDonald's comes from. And then he came in and was like, I'm going to make you famous. I'm going to make you a star. And he was responsible for blowing it up. Right.
That's right. And I just wanted to let you know that I cracked the code on fast food, fast casual and casual. But I did want to point out that we had a pretty spirited discussion in both our Facebook group and on Reddit as well.
I saw that.
So somebody wrote on Reddit, I would have to disagree with the wording of the record labels question from round one. I don't believe the answer would be considered fast food or even fast service. Although you do get your food quickly, you sit down and are served by a waiter or waitress. It's even listed as casual dining on Wikipedia, whereas for comparison, McDonald's is listed as fast food and Chipotle as fast casual. And I dug a little deep into this and came up with there are a couple different things that define what is fast food and fast casual and casual. Fast food means generally the food is prepared off-site and it is frozen. And then heated and prepared minimally at the restaurant location or franchisee location to emphasize the fastness. Fast casual has more of the food prepared on site. So like Chipotle and even burger places like Shake Shack and Five Guys are considered to be fast casual. And then casual would just be any place, as this person from Reddit mentioned, where you sit down and are served by a waiter or waitress. Sorry to Steak and Shake. They are not considered fast food, even though they do have a drive-thru. As you pointed out in the Facebook group, Mark, anybody who sat in that drive-thru knows it's not fast. Steak and Shake would be considered casual. So pretty interesting discussion that came out of your question, Kyle Ann, so thanks for that. And I also used this as fodder for a bonus round for our Trivia Pointy Bell this week. I had listed 10 restaurants and asked our players to determine whether or not they're fast, casual, or casual. So we had a variety of answers, but we all learned something.
Indeed. So, I described Steak and Shake to someone as being almost like they opened a Steak and Shake in like an old bank and had a drive through, and they were like, well, I guess we'll just serve food through this. And then from there, they just kept doing it. But like, I've like literally waited 15 minutes in their drive through for just a milkshake. Mm-hmm. It is like the drive through is an afterthought. They should just close up the drive through. Yeah, it's like it's just for laziness. It's not for quickness. Mm-hmm. You're waiting the same amount of time.
Exactly. They should label it casual drive-thru.
The thing is that there's no dedicated drive-thru person, and they're not going to get tipped from you. So they're way more worried about the people inside that are going to tip them than they are about the people coming through the drive-thru.
And you don't blame low them. Prio.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, you are.
All right. If you'd like to write us with a missed correction, a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Call us at 1-929-356-6966 or find us on social media.
I also want to say, I guess I was dead wrong about the drill thing. I put a poll up for is a drill a common household item, as well as the one about the Waffle House being fast food. Not that I thought I was going to win anything or whatever, but you know, I guess it's more common, which is good. I thought just most people didn't have a drill. But I'm glad they do. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it helped me get to the answer. It got me thinking about a drill. So
All right.
It works.
You guys ready?
Yes.
Quiz me, Daddy.
In 1997, Oscar winner Lynn Redgrave was replaced by Sarah Ferguson as the spokesperson for what product?
Can you repeat that, please?
Yes, one more time, please.
Absolutely. In 1997, Oscar winner Lynn Redgrave was replaced by Sarah Ferguson as the spokesperson for what product?
I don't know who Sarah Ferguson is. Do you?
No, I don't. I for some reason, Sarah Paulson came into my mind. It's not. But that's a different person.
That is a different person.
Her name is Sarah Paulson.
I did go to art school with a painter named Sarah Ferguson, but I don't think it's her.
No, she wasn't a spokesperson in 1997, pre-1997 for a product.
No. Probably a child in that year. And Oscar winner Lynn Redbone?
Redgrave.
Leon Redbone? Redgrave.
Lynn Redgrave, she would be older. She's an older actress.
She would be.
This is interesting, Mark, because I have a question coming up later about a spokesperson who is fired. Some question crossover. Unfortunately, this is not the same
You're fired.
Story. Yeah.
Betsy DeVos is fired. She fired herself.
Good. Bye.
Adios.
Bye.
You're late.
Okay, so Lynn Redgrave is, so who would be, what product would be for, like, older people?
Depends.
On what?
Was Activia around back then? That was a big one. Probably not. What about, like,
Medical Life Alert.
Oh my god, maybe Life Alert. Help, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Sarah Ferguson was the new person.
No, Lynn Redgrave is the new person.
Oh, I thought Lynn Redgrave had gotten replaced.
No.
Yes.
Wait, what?
Yeah, Sarah Ferguson is the replacement.
Yep.
Oh, well that, okay. Well, then it could be a free...
And you said 97? I'm trying to think about commercials in 97.
Yeah, because...
I was 12.
Commercial remembering age. I was 9.
So, ladies in commercials. I vaguely remember like Mr. Clean. There may be some moms that were like attracted to him.
Oh yeah,
this, you know, and he was dancing around with his mop
and
his tight white
shiny
pants,
head,
and a shiny head.
And this, and the lone earring, said, the lone.
Hello, baby.
A chantilly no. lace and a pretty face.
The big cleaner.
Do you think it's like a vacuum?
Like Dirt Devil?
Oreck?
I don't see a spokesperson.
Okay.
What if it's maybe a cosmetics company or like a
skincare company of sorts? That would make sense because Lynn Redgrave would have been like older.
Do you know what she was in? I don't recognize the name.
I don't remember. But they're like the Redgraves, like Vanessa Redgrave, Lynn Redgrave. They're sisters and they're actresses and they're good actresses, but they're like older.
Maybelline?
Or like, yeah, maybe.
I just don't recognize either of these women, so it's really hard for me to
cover even. Girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think about like makeup brands that were marketed to like maybe older women, like Revlon or... I think maybe cosmetics.
You think that's a good track
to
go down?
Yeah, I was initially thinking like Olay, like age repair skin cream, but also Mark Davis did say what product, which leads me to believe maybe it's not like a cosmetics line, it's a specific product.
Oh, okay. Like the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah, or
something like that.
It's a line.
It's a what?
It's a line.
It's a product line. Oh, okay.
It is a product line. Okay, good. Okay, so it could be like a cosmetics company then.
Mm-hmm.
And CoverGirl, I'm trying to think about like popular like makeup lines in the 90s.
Victoria's Secret?
No.
No?
Absolutely not. No.
Absolutely not. Why absolutely not?
Or like razors maybe? Like Venus razors?
Hmm. Oscar winner though? Razors?
No, yeah. Oscar winner, yeah, maybe like
there's gotta be some class to it in some capacity.
You see a lot of Oscar winners doing like Dior and like Chanel and stuff. Maybe it's something like that.
Like perfume? Or no, those are clothing brands.
Well, he said product line, so like it could be like a Dior or like they make products. Lines of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be
I see that more as a brand though. He said a product line.
Okay.
So a product line is like a series of products inside of a brand.
Maybe it's cream cheese. Maybe it's Philadelphia cream cheese. Wasn't there like the lady who was dressed like an angel?
Oh my God. I think, yeah, you're bringing something back.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of familiar. Cream cheese lady?
Cream cheese lady. She was an angel. Because cream cheese is, you know, heavenly.
Like, it's so light, like whipped Philadelphia cream cheese.
Yeah.
This sounds kind of familiar, but not 1997. I feel like this is like a more recent thing.
And also, I don't think they would have gotten Lynn Redgrave to do the cream cheese commercials.
Maybe it's like Columbia House 1 cent CDs, buy 12 CDs for 12 cents. You remember that?
I thought it
those were big back then.
I thought it was 12. Wait, what?
You get 12 CDs for 12 cents, but you're obligated to buy one $20 CD every month.
Oh, yes, I remember that. I do remember that. And you get the catalog.
Yep.
I loved those catalogs.
You had to rip off the little stamps of whatever CD you wanted.
I used to circle the ones that I wanted.
I was never allowed to mail it, but I was allowed to pick it out. I could do my pick. You know, these would be the CDs I would get.
Cute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what are we going with? What do you think?
I have no idea.
Let's just go with...
cream cheese.
Let's just go with... Let's just go with like a Maybelline makeup or a Revlon makeup. Let's go with Maybelline because they've been around like the longest.
Maybe it's Maybelline, Mark.
I'm sorry, it's not.
Okay.
Sarah Ferguson, you know, is the Duchess of York. She's royalty. Lynn Redgrave, a famous actress, and they both were spokespeople for Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There you go. The winning team, the Trivial Poo-Poos, got it right because one of them grew up in Ireland and, of course, knew the Duchess of York pretty well.
Ah. Can I hear how that question was worded one more time?
Absolutely. In 1997, Oscar winner Lynn Redgrave was replaced by Sarah Ferguson as the spokesperson for what product?
You said product. I don't like the description of Weight Watchers as a product. I mean, it technically is a product, but you don't think of like, oh, I'm going to go to the store and get myself a Weight Watchers today. Like, it's more of like...
It's a brand.
It's a brand. Yeah, I would say brand.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll feedback. Let us know what you think, folks. 2010s movies.
Mm. All right.
2010s movies. Pan Am is a fictional nation that serves as the setting for what movie, which was the best-selling DVD of 2012?
Well, I know this.
Do you know this because you know it, or do you know it because he told you the answer?
No, I know this.
Okay.
Because I watched the movie.
Any ideas, Mark?
Best-selling DVD of 2012, huh?
Yep.
Is it Moana?
No.
Well, I'm asking her.
No, it's not Moana.
I'm sussing.
It's... No.
Pardon me.
I mean, we could just tell him.
Okay, just tell me.
It's The Hunger Games.
That's right.
Oh.
The Hunger Games.
Because you're a bookie.
Yes.
So, Pan Am... It takes place in the capital, the main story, which is the capital city, just called the capital, but Pan Am is the North American continent, and subjected to climate change, right? Isn't that part of the setup, is that the sea levels have risen?
Yeah, yeah, that's actually, Pan Am is supposed to be Denver, Colorado, and it was chosen as the nation's capital because of its high elevation.
Mm-hmm. No triple divide, though. Mm-hmm. They should have rethought that.
Indeed. Here is your next question. What word first appeared in the U.S. in the Charleston Daily Mail in the 1940s and was taken from the Latin word for cave? What word first appeared in the U.S. in the Charleston Daily Mail in the 1940s and was taken from the Latin word for cave?
I wasn't subscribing.
Charleston Daily Mail. So South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. The caves of South Carolina.
In the 40s.
Mm-hmm. What's the Latin word for cave? Cavern? Cavre? Cavre? I'm just guessing. Coveve?
It's in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Cat's pajamas?
Okay. I'm just trying to think of, like, sparkle words from the 40s. That were like, you know, like, well, you know, 40s, it's like World War II. Mm-hmm. There was probably a probably a lot of talk. The nuclear bombs would have made like the news. That's something. Is there something that happened regarding, like, a bomb that would cause somebody to invent, like, a word to describe the effects of the bomb that would be comparable to, like, a cave, like a big hole?
Mm.
You know, like maybe, like, crater? Was the word crater used before the 1940s?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, that seems too common.
Yeah. What if it's man cave?
It's a word.
That's a new thing, right? The man gets his own spot of the house. It's got a cave right in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man cave.
Latin word for cave is probably not cave.
I'm thinking this is like a colloquial term. Mm-hmm. Like
bunker?
I was thinking that too, but I feel like this wasn't the age of like bunkers. You know, that was like the 60s during the Cold War.
Yeah, but there were bunkers, you know, in the war, in World War II. They were not, you know, they were shelters out on the battlefield, you know, for soldiers. They weren't like private bunkers. But I don't know. That doesn't sound very Latin. Bunkre?
I don't know, man.
Is there any, like, do you know any, like, Latin surrounding the story of Jesus coming out of the cave?
No.
Is there any kind of, like, Latin, I don't know if...
No.
Maybe if there's, like, a term for the cave
or
something.
Do you think maybe it was a term used to describe, like, mass graves as a result of, like, the concentration camps?
Well, he said 1940, so this is before the war.
That's, like, during the war.
Didn't the war end in 45?
Yeah. So, like, if it happened...
So, 40 is, like, the very beginning of it, though. And South Carolina? I don't know.
I just feel like if... I don't know. It just seems like it's kind of a big deal, and people are probably writing about it quite a bit, at least in the first half of the decade. Or, wait. Maybe... Because war ends in 1945, and then, like, women start, like, getting fucking knocked up left and right. So maybe there's maybe there's some to describe, like, I don't know, like, that phenomena. I don't know. Like a boomer. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm getting too in the weeds about this, I think.
What if it's condom? What if it's like a cave for your dick? I'm thinking of, like, contraceptive devices or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, but people weren't trying to not have babies then. They were like, fuck yeah, let's fucking go forth and multiply, motherfucker.
1940, know? Though? Attitudes could be changing.
Maybe. Because women
Was the
were
word
like,
condom used before 1940?
I doubt
Is
it.
An old word?
I doubt it.
They would call it a prophylactic, right?
I think before so. That? Yeah. I don't know where the word condom comes from. Maybe it is condom.
Concave?
Maybe.
Condome?
I think that's...
A dome for your...
I think that's probably our best guess.
Let's go with it.
Okay, let's go with condom.
I'm sorry,
Jimmy Hat.
Incorrect.
Oh.
The correct answer is spelunker. Spelunker, yes.
That makes sense.
Couple of people checking out some caverns, some cave mm-hmm. connections, and they named themselves spelunkers.
That's one of those that feels so obvious in retrospect. I like that. I like questions like that.
I wish it was a little more specific, but yeah, I like it.
Okay. Survival techniques. My next category for you guys.
Okay.
A kinzie is a habitable structure made from what?
Foreskin. A kinzie is a...
habitable structure made from what? And kinzie is spelled Q-U-I-N-Z-H-E-E. Kinzie.
Bamboo, Kyle. I did have the question where I asked about bamboo and I called it wood.
Yeah. That's you're probably right. And that sounds like it might be like...
It's kind of meta.
Yeah.
Which I tend... It tends to usually not pay off, but it sounds like it's a... like an Asian word.
It's right, yeah. Yeah. So maybe bamboo. Or...
Q-U-I-N-Z-H-E-E.
Yes.
That sounds like it could be either Asian or like Native American, indigenous.
Maybe it's made out of Michael Jackson's gloves and is a kinzihi.
I believe that's a kinzihu.
Like, maybe it's
maybe it's Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Wow. Hire her, Maybelline. Do you hear that?
What? Hire me. I'll write you a new jingle and it'll be good.
Lee really sold a wow. Hire her, Maybelline.
Clear Eyes is awesome.
Take my wife, please. You know, we really don't have much to suss with. I think this may be a trap.
I think it might be a trap too. It's like bamboo, could be bamboo. Maybe it's like a hide, animal hide.
Maybe it's wood.
Maybe it's wood.
I don't know. My bamboo is where my head's at.
Let's go with bamboo.
We're gonna say bamboo.
Let's just go with it.
No, sorry, that's incorrect. It is a word of Athabascan origin, and the Athabascan grouping is a group of languages indigenous to northern Canada. A kinzie is a habitable structure made from snow.
Ah, an igloo.
Well, no.
Or igloo-esque. So
it is igloo-esque, yes. So the difference would be that a kinzie is made by forming a large pile of snow that has been hollowed out. So you would go spelunking, for example, in this situation.
Well,
an igloo is built from blocks of hard snow. And the difference is that an igloo is meant to last basically an entire season. A kinzie is a more temporary structure, only a couple days, but it will serve you well enough to keep you insulated. So it's a survival technique. It also differs from a true snow cave, which is where you would just dig a hole into a hill and then use the natural forming of snow there as your structure. So a kinzie is made from actually putting a pile together and then hollowing it out.
Pile in.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here's your...
Please don't call my wife that.
here's your last question of the second round.
Cool.
What river, the second longest in Europe, has a name that comes from the Sanskrit word for dewdrop?
Lots of language, ancient language questions here.
You know, someone was like, oh, the second round is clearly... it." For the most part, I mean, I was like, well, the question... At the most is what's the second longest river in Europe, if you want to get it like that, but it gives you a little help, maybe.
Yeah. Dewdrop.
So it's the second longest in Europe.
Could be and the Rhine Sanskrit? Or the Rhone.
The Sanskrit. What's the river that's like, in Turkey. What's that river?
I'm not sure. That's a good guess, though.
It's like the river that runs right through Constantinople.
Europe, but yeah, Turkey.
There's a river that, yeah, and that it would be, yeah.
Is that where, no. Is that where Kathmandu is?
I don't know.
Sanskrit word for dewdrop.
The Thames, the Sen. I have a feeling it might be that Turkish river that I don't know the name of.
I mean, that seems like the most likely place that Sanskrit would show up, as far as names go.
Yeah.
I have no idea. My European geography is 0.0. So shall we just say Turkish River?
The Turkish River.
Turkish River.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Kylian,
do you know a fair amount of classical music?
A little bit, yeah.
Do you know bum 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 bum?
The Danube.
Yes, Danube.
Ah, the Danube. The
Blue Danube Waltz, as used in 2001 A Space Odyssey. Danube. coming from the Sanskrit word for dewdrop, the second longest river in Europe.
Where's that located?
It goes through a bunch of different countries. I think France is one of them, yes.
I see. Okay.
All right.
Is it
my
time?
Final category for you guys this round is American literature.
Cool.
Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin has said that the title of his A Song of Ice and Fire book series was partially inspired by a work of what American poet? Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin has said that the title of his A Song of Ice and Fire book series was partially inspired by a work of what American poet?
I don't know why I'm thinking Dylan Thomas. Was Dylan Thomas American?
I've never heard that name before in my life.
What? Dylan Thomas?
Mm.
He does that Tiger Tiger Burning Bright. That one.
Never heard that.
Do not go gently into that good night.
Oh, okay. Whatever. Can you read the question one more time?
Sure. Game of Thrones creator George R.R. Martin has said that the title of his A Song of Ice and Fire book series was partially inspired by a work of what American poet?
So A Song of Ice and Fire, that line specifically was inspired by what poet?
Yep, a particular work of what American poet?
I mean, you're the book person of the two of us. I mean, I was thinking of like Walt Whitman and people like that. Because I don't know much.
Well, I think I'm going to feel like such an asshole if it isn't Dylan Thomas who does that poem. Like, do not go gently into that good night, but burn until like into the night or something. How does it, which that's the fire part of it. Like, and I think he was American. Pretty sure that's Dylan Thomas.
Do not go gently into that good night.
Rage against the dying of the light or something. What it is what the line is.
We can go with Dylan Thomas. I mean, you know more about this stuff than I do. I would literally be guessing at like names. Ooh, maybe it's Rupi Kapoor.
Fucking yikes.
Yeah, you want to go with Dylan Thomas? I mean,
let's just go with Dylan Thomas.
Who else? I mean, it could be Ralph Waldo Emerson. It could be, you know, like two roads diverged in a yellow wood. Was that Emerson?
Yes.
Or was that so. Thoreau?
Thoreau. That might Emerson. Be Thoreau.
It could be one of them. It could be. I don't. We can go with. Let's go with Dylan Thomas. Dylan, 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 and Dylan.
Let's just go with Dylan Thomas.
We're going to say Dylan Thomas.
Wrong. No, that's wrong. It is the person who wrote Two Roads Diverged in a Yellow Wood, and sorry that I could not travel both. It is neither of the individuals that you mentioned.
Oh, wait.
It is the only poet to have won the Pulitzer Prize for poetry 4 times. That's right, Kylian.
Robert Frost.
It is Robert Frost.
Robert fucking Frost.
The poem Fire and Ice. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if I had to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction, ice is also great and would suffice. So that is the poem that inspired the title A Song of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin. Critics have compared its 9-line structure narrative to Dante's Inferno and its 9 rings, 1 line per ring. Astronomer Harlow Shapley claimed to inspire the poem itself in 1960. Shapley is the one who studied galaxies and set the foundation for the concept that we call the habitable zone. Mm-hmm. He kind of studied that. It was the first to identify that. And claims that Frost once asked him how the world would end, and he responded that either the sun would explode and incinerate the Earth, or the Earth will somehow escape this fate, only to end up slowly freezing in deep space. The poem was published the following year.
Hey, I've got a meme idea. Can I give it to you and can you put it out before this episode comes out? It'll make you famous. A picture of Euron Greyjoy and Jaime Lannister. Mm-hmm. And you find the Sisters of Mercy font and make it say the Misters of Cersei.
Oh my God.
All right. I don't know about famous, but
it'll
maybe
make you famous. Maybe
that would be hot in a group. Hot in a group.
You should do that. All right. I tried to do it today. I even have a picture. I can send you the picture of the two of them together.
Oh. There's a failed attempt.
Well, I only have like five fonts on my phone. You know, I don't have a good font.
Only five.
Well, I mean, like, you know, I'm sure I could download.
He knows
them
I'm a pro.
Whatever. Yeah, I mean, you pro know designer. You know fonts, et cetera, et cetera. So
yeah,
I'm the brains. You're the brawn on this situation.
Send it over, Papa.
I'll send it over to you right now. I'll do it while we're on this break. How's that?
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Let's take a little break, and we'll be back with some rate my questions in round three, our final round. We're back, and it's time for a rate my question. Right, pangolin one
Damn.
More time there.
That was killer.
You killed it, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks so much, Pangolin, for sending in miscorrection and rate my question. We're going to keep those in the rotation. First up, we have a note here from Kevin Hunt. Kevin writes, "Hey, guys. I submitted this a while ago. Maybe you got lost in the shuffle. Here is my favorite trivia question of all time. What country shares the longest land border with France?" I'll leave the answer here in the form of a Google search URL. Okay. Well, I don't know. My first thought would be Spain, but that seems kind of obvious.
Here, just like read that one more time.
What country shares the longest land border with France?
Is it okay. One of those things where where it's like one of France's fucking other properties? I guess not, huh?
What's south of France? Mountains, Alps.
I think, right? Switzerland.
I wonder if this is a trick question because it's like a river divides it, so it's not technically like a land border. I don't know if that counts or not, if it's trying to be tricky.
I don't know why I'm thinking Germany.
Yeah. Could be.
Like, I think if I were, like, I'm just trying to picture the map in my head, mm-hmm. and I think it's like they're pretty much neighbors, like.
Right.
Could be
is
wrong,
France,
though.
Does France border Italy?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
It's over too far east, I think. But, again, my European geography skills, not so good. I'm cool Germany as the answer.
Okay.
But I just feel like there's, like, he said it's his favorite trivia question.
I was going to say, I mean, I'm trying to, like, not put that into consideration, but
right.
knowing it. Is making me think that it's got to be something tricky.
Is there any like French occupied areas that would somehow technically count or something?
Ooh, that's a good question. So like maybe like an African country.
Mm-hmm.
What did you say?
She's saying if there's like a French territory.
That's what I said. That was like my original thing. Like one of their like properties, like.
Oh, I see.
But see, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, I mean, it could very well be like somewhere.
They do have like the most countries and the most time zones, right? Isn't that a thing that we know about France?
That's interesting, though. I mean, the thing is, like, as a French territory, France, do you count that?
I mean, it's technically France, I guess, right?
We count Alaska. As part of the United States, you know.
Even though it's not in the mainland, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's an exclave, right? Isn't that the term for it?
Right, yeah.
So could this be a French exclave that's taking this title?
Maybe.
Like Egypt or something crazy like that.
Well, I'm trying to think of what French countries in Africa are there in Africa?
There's a. Starts with an M. Morocco?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's formerly a French colony.
Formerly?
In Morocco. Yeah, I think they're independent now. I think. I'm not sure.
What about Mozambique?
Definitely a French looking name. Mm-hmm. They've got that Q-U-E on the end.
Mm.
But it's the country that's bordering France, so it'd be whatever's bordering those countries, if that's where we're going with this. We might be getting too in the weeds here.
Mm. In the this episode just needs to be called In the Weeds. Kyle said it twice and IU said it once.
I don't know. Maybe we should just go with Germany and just see what this answer is, since this is clearly going to be a tricky one. What do you guys think?
I'm going to say Namibia.
Okay. Okay. I think we're onto something here.
Mm-hmm.
The border is located between the Brazilian state of Ampa and the French region of French Guinea.
Okay.
It is the longest border France shares with another country, the one with Belgium being next.
Okay.
What? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is...
So, New Guinea? Papua New Guinea?
No, it's not. I think I might be spelling it wrong. It's G-U-I-A-N-A. Guyana. French Guyana?
French Guyana.
Guyana. Yeah. Guyana. That's probably it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's in South America. It is the longest border France shares with another country. The one with Belgium being next. So in Europe,
it would be Belgium. So if we're doing Europe, it would be Belgium.
Okay. So, yeah.
Either way, we're wrong.
What do we think about this question? It's pretty tricky.
It's tricky.
Because it assumes you know that France has a bunch of territories.
Where they all are.
Uh-huh. And that they're outside of Europe.
Yeah, I would say that you'd want to, like, include something, like, including... their territories or something like that, probably. The only thing that really like tipped us off was the fact that he said favorite trivia. It's a great fact. It's mm-hmm. it's a very, very good question. I'd give it an A. I mean, I just think that you might want to tip your hand a little bit, because even if you know it's including territories, it's still a hard question.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Maybe even like a version like in what country does France's longest border exist, mm-hmm. or not in what country, on what continent?
Yeah, I would maybe just add at the beginning, including all territories it controls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Comma.
Yeah.
What country shares the longest land border with France? So I'll give this a PIS. I think I'm going to take the B because it seems like there's not enough of a built-in hint here. To, you know, the fact that it said here's my favorite trivia question of all time helped us out a lot. In, you know, even opening our minds up to that, we were thinking Germany, maybe in just Europe. So I think in order to mitigate a feeling of like, oh, that question wasn't worded fairly, how could I have known that that's what they meant? Maybe just adding a little thing up front that says including all of its territories. And then we have a couple voicemails here.
Love it.
From Dallas.
Dallas. Mm.
Hey guys, it's Dallas. I've got a little rate my bum for you. Before I forgot to tell you guys, Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year, Dallas.
You guys are doing well, and I hope to see you soon. And here is my bum. Though the year 1814 was the last large-scale occupation of the U.S. Capitol before the events of January 6, 2021. The most recent attack of the U.S. Capitol grounds, perpetrated by Russell Weston Jr., resulted in the deaths of two U.S. Capitol police officers. And what year did it occur?
Mm.
I give you a little bit of hint there. We're all alive for this, obviously. Thank you very much, and I hope you guys have a good time assessing.
Okay, so he gave us a little bit of background information there. The last large-scale occupation of the United States was in 1814. And, of course, he's referencing the recent news of the occupation that occurred on January 6th last week at the time of this airing. And he wants to know, basically, his question is about a smaller engagement that was perpetrated by Russell Weston Jr. and resulted in the deaths of two U.S. Capitol police officers. What year did it occur?
I don't know. I don't even remember this.
You said we were all alive for it. Now, with all this, footage coming out of the Capitol being overtaken, I was looking at the room that they have the statues in that, you know, the people were walking, you know, delicately in between the red velvet ropes after they had broken into the Capitol. And I remember being a kid and being able to, like, free roam in that room.
Yeah.
Like, they did not have the ropes up when I visited in, I want to say, 1995,
mm-hmm.
96, somewhere in there.
Little
so
boy.
This sounds like it might have happened after that, you know, because security is tightened up over the years to the point where they had several barricades that were gone over.
Wasn't there this
recent occupation?
Wasn't there a situation where, like, somebody was, like, shooting at, like, one of the rooms of the White House, and, like, Barack Obama was, like, working out or something at the time in that room?
Yeah, there was a shooting at the White House during the Obama administration. I do remember that.
Do you think maybe it's that?
Did anybody bring in Obama?
Oh my god!
No. I think this is probably a separate incident.
You think so?
I mean, what's the chance? What are the chances he's going to shoot at the White House and then make it over to the Capitol, you know, and kill two police officers? I think this is probably.
So he specified it was the Capitol.
Yeah,
not
the most recent attack on the Capitol grounds, perpetrated by Russell Weston Jr., resulted in the deaths of two U.S. Capitol police officers. What year did it occur? So the last major occupation, large-scale occupation of the Capitol, was in 1814, but this was a small-scale attack on the Capitol.
Okay.
I guess perpetrated by just one person.
I did post something today in 2017 that there was a some kind of thing at the Capitol protesting healthcare bullshit in which people were dragged away.
Right.
I don't know that anybody was killed in that, but there were people being, like, carted off.
Yeah, I don't think.
This says two U.S. Capitol police officers died, though. So it was like an attack, you know?
Yeah.
That seems like it was, you know, a protest. And I mean, maybe somebody attacked the police officers during that, but I don't know. I feel like that story would be well known if it was connected to that.
Yeah.
I
don't know.
The Tea Party thing, though, that era, you know, like 2008. What do you think?
2008 sounds good.
2008, 2009, somewhere in there.
Was 2008 a year that we voted?
I believe so. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's go with it.
Okay. All right. 2008.
2008.
I changed my answer to 2008.
Okay. Noted.
It was 1998, so we were wrong on that one. Mm-hmm. Weston's exact motives are unknown, but he has expressed a strong distrust of the federal government of the United States. And he was charged on July 26th in 1998. As of July 2018, Weston remains in a mental institution, diagnosed with mental disorder, paranoid schizophrenia.
Diagnosed with being a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, 1998. All right. What do we think about this question?
It's toughy.
It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's harder.
I'd say it's pretty difficult. You know, the Dallas likes asking specific years. That's never been my favorite format.
You do hate
for
it.
A trivia question because it is for me, it's very hard to pinpoint a year. You know, it's like asking for a very specific piece of information. But, you know, it works for some people. I'm sure people that have like very good memories. That's the trick, right? You know, you build your mind palace in a way that you can remember stuff like this. But yeah, I would say it's I would give this one a IS. It's interesting and it's short, but it doesn't really have a hint. And I wouldn't say it's like popular either. It is timely, though. You know, this is like a very topical question.
Yeah.
So you want to bust this one out anytime there's an attack on the Capitol, basically. but yeah,
I'd give it
an IS. It's not my favorite question, but I think it works. You know, if you do a topical trivia, this one might be good for you.
I'd give it like a B to a B plus. I think having something in there that kind of helps you out with the you know, maybe even like in what happened in what decade or something, either a little more open or something that kind of clues you into the year or whatever.
We would have gotten that wrong still, but I feel like it would have been more fair to ask for the decade.
Well, he also told us that it was while we were alive. I mean, that would have been okay.
That's
true. The 90s, the 80s, or the 2000s or 2010s. It would have slimmed things up a little bit.
Yeah, that's still a wide range of options, though. Mm-hmm. That's four different options. So I think that would help.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I like that idea. All right. And then we have one more call here. This is another call from Jeopardy Man. And I haven't listened to this, so I don't know if this first Jeopardy Man, second Jeopardy Man, or new Jeopardy Man. Let's figure it out.
Hello, Lee and Mark. This is the really real Jeopardy Man. My name has been besmirched for too long.
I think this is a new Jeopardy Man.
Mm-hmm. Thus, I have a question for you. But don't say bad words. The month of January is named after Janus. No, not Hugh Janus, just Janus, Roman god of gates and doors. And he is usually depicted as having two of what? Jeopardy Man strikes again. With no bad words, please.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh my god.
So, first of all, is this the real Jeopardy Man? I don't think so.
There's no way in hell.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm convinced.
Do you think any of these have been the real Jeopardy Man?
I don't think so.
No? Maybe number two. I think number two might have
possibly
been the real
number
Jeopardy
two.
Man.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. This is very over the top, though. This mystery Jeopardy Man 3. We'll call this Jeopardy Man 3.
Janus?
Yes. Depicted as having two of what?
Dicks.
He is the this is the Roman god of what?
The namesake of the month of January.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the god of dates. Is that what it was?
I think that's what he said.
Let's listen to it one more time.
Hello, Lee and Mark. This is the really real Jeopardy Man. My name has been besmirched for too long. Thus, I have a question for you. But don't say bad words. The month of January is named after Janus. No, not Hugh Janus.
Not Hugh Janus.
Just Janus, Roman god of gates and doors. And he is usually depicted as having two of what? Jeopardy Man strikes again. But no bad words, please.
Oh. That noise at the end. Dates and doors.
Mm-hmm. Janus. Depicted as having two of what?
Do we think that it's like something that a human usually has? Or two items?
My friend's band in high school wrote a song called Ode to Janus, and it was about this god. And And the chorus was like,
this guy's got two dicks.
Two dicks, two noses, two mouths, two faces.
Two faces. It's two faces. It's two faces.
He's got a face on either side?
Yes. Mm. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a shame we're blind. And we should,
I don't know if Jeopardy Man is going
to
be offended
to see.
If we say dicks. You know, that could be Jeopardy Man's. Well, Jeopardy Man seems sensitive to it, you know? So I'm just saying from Jeopardy Man's perspective, it's a vulgarity.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go with faces?
Yeah, let's go with faces. I like that.
Okay, two faces. Let's look up huge anus.
No, not huge anus.
Jeff Janus.
Yes, that's correct. Two faces.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Harvey Dent of the Roman mythology. That's good. I like that. And we had a Roman mythology request for a Pointy Bell trivia this week. So I didn't know that. I like that as a Roman mythology question.
Yes.
That's pretty interesting. I would say I like this. I'm going to give this a at least an IBS. I don't know if it's popular. Roman mythology, Greek mythology is usually more popular, but I'll give it PIBS. It's a good question. I'm going to give it a PIBS.
I give it an A+. I like that question a lot.
I'll give it an A+ too.
Okay, so thank you for the really real Jeopardy Man question. And thank you, Dallas and Kevin Hunt, not Kevin Hart. If you have a Rate My Question, you can submit it to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or please give us a call at 1-929-356-6966.
Hey, Kevin Hunt, if you have a baby and it's a boy, name it Mike.
Baby.
Yes, or a girl.
No.
Either one. No? No girls named Mike? Okay, that's Mark's opinion.
I'm just kidding.
Mark has a firm stance on that.
No, don't you dare.
All right, famous catchphrases, my final category for you guys. Mm-hmm. I told you it was coming, Mark. Famous catchphrases.
All right.
Well, this is about the fired spokesperson. Clara Peller. Do you know the name?
Nope.
Clara Peller, who was known for her catchphrase, "Where's the beef?" was dropped from what fast food company's ad campaigns after finding the beef in a Prego commercial? So she was asking, where's the beef for what fast food company?
I'm 90% sure I know this.
Isn't it just a McDonald's?
No, I'm pretty positive it's Wendy's.
Oh, yeah, it is Wendy's, isn't it? Or is it? Yeah, I think it is Wendy's.
Because she is at like another fast food place's. And she's looking in the burger and she's like, where's the beef? Because their burgers are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty confident. There's a chance I might be wrong, but I feel pretty confident.
No, I think you're right.
We're going to say Wendy's.
That's correct, Mark.
Hey.
Good mind palace there.
Thank you.
Yes, that is pretty accurate. But yeah, she could not say no to the secondary spokesperson job. And she's shown in a Prego commercial in a recliner going, I found it! I found it! I really found it! And she's got like a giant jar of Prego Plus, which has beef and onions in it.
Ooh, okay.
That's what you want to eat with your pasta.
Hell yeah. I'll eat some beef and onions.
All right,
I was working once with one of my like head bosses, and he did something and I said grazie and he said prego and I said no, I'm just fat.
Good one.
Thank you. All right, here's your last question. I like this question. What invention developed in Oklahoma in 1928 originally needed to be hooked up to a parked car's battery to function? What invention developed in Oklahoma in 1928 originally needed to be hooked up to a parked car's battery to function?
Okay, right off the bat, I'm thinking like a portable speaker because I'm thinking people maybe used it in drive-ins.
Oh, like a sound system?
Yeah, mm-hmm. like a like
sound
some
system
sort of...
gonna bring me back up. Yeah,
exactly.
One thing that I can depend on.
Sound system. System. Sound system.
And that's how like you broadcast like, you know, the movie into your cars by plugging it into the battery.
Plug it in, plug it in.
So you think no car radio, basically, and then they sell this thing on the side. Like, it's like an aftermarket thing. Like, cars don't have stereos in them, but you need some sound, right? So now you have the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I could be wrong, though. That's just, like, my first instinct.
And it would make sense that you would need it around your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was, like, thinking, like, well, what is it in a garage or something? You know, where you'd have your car. Could it be a, like a automatic dishwasher or washing machine of some sort?
I don't know about a dishwasher. How many dishwashers do you know were in garages?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, washing machine, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or dryer. But not dishwasher.
But yeah, I mean, I guess you would just plug those things in, probably.
Yeah.
Hooking it up to a car battery.
You do need a special outlet, like, for, mm-hmm. like, washer and dryers.
It just seems like a weird way to get there.
It does.
Yours makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm just trying to think of other, you know, potential answers here.
Mm. Or maybe, like, maybe just, like, the radio? No, that wouldn't make sense.
What if you're, like, at the beach?
Where's the beach?
You have some kind of, what kind of device would you want?
I found it. I really found it. Got a bunch of sand and fucking screaming kids.
I don't know, I'm kind of drawing a blank. I'm thinking it's like a speaker. That's the only thing.
So you think the answer is just speaker? Car speaker?
Well, like, I don't, yeah.
Hmm. What if it's like an automatic garage door opener? Like, you have to get out of your car and hook it up to the the car battery.
That would be ridiculous.
Yeah, that's totally ridiculous. It's not that.
The 1920s.
Mm-hmm. Tractor? Just put like a...
Maybe. Like a lawnmower?
A combine on the front of your car.
That actually might... Maybe it's a lawnmower. Like those old lawnmowers, you know?
So before they had like small motor engines.
And here's the thing. I remember like mentioning, like, I remember like I was watching like an old movie or something with my parents, and I'm like, wow, those actually look like way simpler. Like, maybe we should bring those back. And my
the
dad
push mowers?
Yeah, and my dad was
I had one.
Yeah, and my dad
Fred
was like
had one too.
Terrible.
My dad was like, actually those you would like. He's like, there was a high risk of like electric shock. You could get shocked, which if it was like plugged directly into a car battery, like maybe that's why.
So you think lawnmower?
Maybe it's a lawnmower. I mean, I don't, maybe that's just another sus.
That's interesting. But yeah, those push mowers, if you want to mow your lawn for 10 hours straight, that's how you do it. Because you'll have to mow that. You'll have to mow that bad boy twice, maybe three times.
Gotta find one of these push mowers. Save gas.
He mows
like twice with it. It's like, this sucks. This is fucking terrible. It's like, yeah, man. That's why we've moved on.
Yeah, you use one of those things, you'll call Saudi Arabia directly.
I'm so sick of oil and gas. I'm gonna get a fucking buggy and a horse.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this sucks.
Where's my Wainwright?
I got a broken axle.
All right. Let's go with it. Lawnmower.
Or do I want to go with lawnmower or like a speaker, portable speaker?
I feel like lawnmower is more interesting. And the speaker, it just seems, I don't know. Again, going meta, Mark said he likes this question. So I feel like the weirder answer is more attractive.
That's incorrect.
Let me guess. No, the answer is hot dog.
So just for some clarity, the one that needed to be hooked up to the car battery was a 1928 before it was the next version, better version of it, was founded in Oklahoma in 1935. The correct answer is parking meter. A parking meter. The first parking meter is when you parked, you would have to hook the parking meter up to your battery for it to function. In 1935, a few years later, they started making the coin-operated parking meters in Oklahoma.
Okay.
That is fascinating.
Kyle doesn't think so. Okay. Big fucking deal. Two engineering professors from Oklahoma State University started working on it in 1933. And the first one was installed in Oklahoma City in 1935.
Wow.
Okay. So what? Fuck your parking meter.
I didn't mean it like that.
It's okay.
That is crazy. I would have never guessed that.
Yeah.
I love that. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's surprising.
I thought it was pretty interesting also.
Yeah.
The Wikipedia article says an early patent for a parking meter, U.S. patent, was filed by Roger Babson on August 30th, 1928. The meter was intended to operate on power from the battery of the parking vehicle and required a connection from the vehicle to the meter.
That is so wild.
Different times.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great question, Mark. And thank you for a set of great questions today. We learned so much.
Thank you, and to you.
All right. And thanks, Kyle, for sitting in and sussing with us.
Of course, my darling.
Thank you.
That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Please join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways. The easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page.
Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim, our team captains, Sean, Lydia, Gil.
It's Gil,
Kristen, Fletcher, Aaron, and David Holbrook. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Molly and Ryan, Nicole, Alex, Jenny, Christopher, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Carly, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. And of course, thanks to our Rumpel Snailskins, Doug, Kevin, Sarah, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.,
Mikey and Billy Ray Cyrus,
Michael S.,
Mikey Snowpile,
and Michael J.
Mikey Jumper Cables on your parking meter! If you'd like to write us with a rate my question or miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, on Reddit at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
And as Lee mentioned, we do have a Facebook group that you can join as well. We had some fun polls going on, some fun discussion about the drill thing and about the Waffle House thing. Come and join us. Go on Ligma. Facebook. And I showed the Ligma meme. And you showed a video of something. What did you post?
From Wizard People, Dear Reader.
Yes,
Anything's People, Better Than Crawling. Reading.
Yes. Just go
you on, get all the context
yes.
from our episodes.
Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service. Five stars only.
Please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners.
Have a fantastic week.